Hello, and welcome to Southern Living Magazine, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Angela Odey, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the April 29 issue of Southern Living. Enjoy. From Life at Southern Living, here is the letter from Sid Evans, the editor-in-chief. What's your secret? A tribute to the places our readers love to talk about. When I was a kid in Memphis, we would occasionally drive to a place called the Shelby Motel on Summer Avenue because my father thought they had the best catfish in the city. It was a good 20 or 30 minutes from our house, but the experience was worth the trip. They had those many jukeboxes in each booth with lots of Elvis and Al Green and Conway Twitty, and my folks would bring a bottle of something in a brown paper bag and then ask for cups of ice. Despite the linoleum tables, low ceilings, and questionable decor, the place had a certain kind of magic. The catfish was flaky and delicious, served in a red plastic basket with a mound of hush puppies and a few lemon slices. My brother and I would eat so much we had to lie down in the back of the station wagon on the way home. The Shelby Motel is long gone now. Does anyone out there remember it? But for a while, it was one of those secret hot spots the South seems to have in abundance. I have no idea how this little restaurant on the edge of town gained such a following. It certainly wasn't their Facebook page, and probably wasn't a review in the Commercial Appeal newspaper, but somehow word spread. Southerners just know how to sniff out a good restaurant, and once they do, they like to tell their friends and family all about it. The same goes for inns, hotels, bars, small towns, barbecue joints, and pretty much any place that has real character. In a sense, that's what our annual South's Best issue is all about. For 3 years now, we fielded an extensive survey of Southern Living readers to determine the best destinations in the region. This job has gotten a lot harder because there are so many remarkable places to choose from. But what you'll find in these pages is a compendium of beloved classics and exciting newcomers. Whether it's a fresh take on Charleston, South Carolina, which seems to reinvent itself every year, a visit to the dynamic town of Cleveland, Mississippi, or a table at Lazy One's Meat Pie Restaurant in Natchitoches, Louisiana, it's all there. These are the places our readers are talking about. Turn to page 53 for a taste of what's out there. And if you have a tip on a secret catfish joint or some other place the world needs to know about, we want to hear from you. From the Home and Garden section, The Grumpy Gardener, Our Garden Expert Alleviates Your Growing Pains, by Steve Bender. Stinky Wisteria. This is the first year that my wisteria has bloomed, and the flowers smell like cat pee, not the wisteria scent I've always loved. Is there anything I can do? Burma. You probably have the native wisteria called Amethyst Falls. It doesn't tear up trellises and grow wildly like the Japanese and Chinese types, but its blossoms do emit a distinctive bouquet. You can't change the fragrance, but you can plant the vine in a place where it's less likely to offend, next to the outhouse, for example. Hosta La Vista. 5 years ago, I planted a hosta garden. I probably had 25 or 30 plants that were very healthy and growing well. This spring, not a single plant came up. What is the reason? Richard. My guess is that they were destroyed by voles, small, hosta-loving rodents that eat roots and stems. One way to discourage them is to pull away all mulch and leaf litter from around the plants, as voles will use this to hide from predators while dining on your hostas. You could also consider sprinkling some rodent repellent around the area. Flaky crepe myrtles. My crepe myrtles have a grayish, flaky growth on the branches and trunks. Is this some type of fungus? The trees are getting new leaves now and appear to be growing, but I'm worried that they will die. Please save them from this fate with your expertise, Marie. This growth is called lichen, and it's all over my crepe myrtles too. It's harmless and completely natural, so there's no need to worry or do anything. Grass for shade. I live near the Gulf Coast and want to put down sod in an area that is partly shady. I tried Rebel Tall Fescue, but it didn't do very well. Any suggestions? Larry. Tall fescue won't grow well that far south. Its lower limit is USDA Zone 7, and you're probably in Zone 8B or 9. Try Palmetto St. Augustine instead. St. Augustine is the best grass for your climate zone, and Palmetto is the most shade-tolerant selection. Frustrated by lavender. I cannot grow lavender from seed. The seedlings get about 2 inches high, and then they die. I've tried everything from freezing the seeds for 8 days to soaking them in water to yelling at them. Margaret. It sounds like the soil is staying too wet. This will encourage a fungal disease called damping off that can actually kill seedlings. Start with new potting soil and ensure the pot drains well, has good air circulation, and gets plenty of light. Keep the soil moist, but never soggy. The same goes for starting seeds of many other types of plants. Grumpy's gripe of the month. Walk outside right now and inhale that fresh spring air. What is that fishy smell? See any large white flowering trees on your street? They are most likely Bradford pears, one of the worst trees that's ever been foisted upon the American public. Released by the USDA in the early 1960s, they became the darlings of nurseries, landscapers, and homeowners due to their beautiful spring flowers and fall foliage, resistance to diseases, pests, and drought, and adaptability to almost any type of soil. Then we discovered that their flowers smell like tuna and their thorny seedlings come up everywhere. I detest Bradford pears, and so should you. Around the Garden, a seasonal guide for green thumbs. Plant of the month. Firewitch dianthus. Colorful flowers and foliage make this perennial a must-have, by Steve Bender. The toughest thing when talking about firewitch dianthus is keeping your compliments to 100 words. This hardy evergreen perennial grows about 10 inches tall and spreads up to 3 feet. Scads of showy, bright pink, fragrant flowers smother its blue-silver foliage in spring. Blooms, which make good cut flowers, appear sporadically in the heat of summer but return in bunches in fall. Plant firewitch in full sun and well-drained soil in USDA zones 3 to 9. It tolerates drought and humidity, forms a handsome ground cover, and attracts butterflies. Plus, deer don't eat it. Divide it in late fall to make more plants. Your April checklist. Plant. Set out summer annuals and vegetable plants after your last spring frost. Don't be in a rush. Waiting an extra week or two can prevent an unexpected disaster. If you are sowing seeds, make sure the soil is at least 65 degrees when you do, or the seeds may rot or germinate poorly. Fertilize. Feed both warm and cool season lawns with a slow-release product labeled for your type of grass. Do not use weed in feed. It won't work well until summer weeds are actively growing, about a month from now. Water in fertilizer using a sprinkler. Control. While you're fertilizing the lawn, put down a season-long fire ant preventer as well. This can stop those vindictive insects from building any mounds for at least 6 months. It takes far less time than treating individual mounds later. Resist. Are you one of those people who love to prune? Do not prune French hydrangea now, except to remove dead wood. Otherwise, you'll probably cut off the swelling flower buds, and then you'll complain about having no blooms later. Welcome. Hummingbirds return to the south from their wintering grounds in Central and South America. Greet them with hummingbird feeders and their favorite flowers: bee balm, coral bells, foxglove, iris, lilac, pentas, salvia, and trumpet honeysuckle. The South's best small towns. Have a favorite? That's how this all began. 3 years ago, we decided to launch our annual crowdsourced awards to celebrate the people and places you love. As we poured over 65,000 surveys, it was clear that Southerners are passionate about their picks. Join us in toasting this year's winners, from the soulful small town to the 3-time winning city to the chef who is a true hometown hero. By Betsy Cribb. The South's best small towns. Number 1, Beaufort, North Carolina. The second act town. It's easy to fall in love with this place. Beaufort is planted on the outermost reach of North Carolina's southern coast. Century-old cottages frosted with white gingerbread woodwork dot sleepy oak-shaded streets, which crawl down to the water in a tiny grid. This former fishing village is relaxed and low-key, but it welcomes newcomers with exuberant hospitality. People smile and say hello here. They'll stop mid-task to ask a passerby how they're doing. It's a community that bands together when the going gets tough. Just weeks after Hurricane Florence walloped Beaufort last September, it had all but bounced back to its old self, with live music drifting down the wooden boardwalk once more, floating between boat masts and across brick storefronts. It's the kind of place you visit, maybe once, maybe dozens of times, and eventually decide to remain forever. Here, meet six Beaufort locals who did just that. Suits turned shopkeepers. It's hard for Christina Cunningham to imagine living anywhere else but Beaufort. "I don't care if I have to clean fish," says the owner of lifestyle shop Beaufort Linen Company. "I'd do anything to stay here." Before they owned the blue-shuttered store on Front Street, the town's main drag, Christina and her husband Richie called Raleigh, North Carolina home. At the time, both of them were working for a privately held financial firm. "We spent every free moment we had down here, and on Sunday afternoons when we would leave, I would cry riding across the bridge," says Christina. "I was just so in love with this place and the community and how we felt when we were here." The two of them started discussing what it would take to make moving to Beaufort a reality. Christina had always dreamed of designing a textile line, and her parents and Richie's grandparents had owned stores. Retail was in the couple's DNA. So when a space opened up on the town's bustling Front Street, Christina and Richie quit their jobs, made the move to Beaufort, and opened a store focused on clothing and home goods. Almost 5 years and a major hurricane later, their shop is a survivor. It's a fixture of the town's landscape and stocks everything from works by local artists to a line of pajamas that Christina designed. Tourists pop in for souvenirs to commemorate their travels, but locals stop by to shop and say hello too. "The biggest surprise of living here is how much love we've received," says Christina, who donated 10% of all her shop's sales in the weeks after Hurricane Florence to relief efforts in the Carolinas. "We had our son Baker's first birthday party in our front yard, and the mail lady stopped by. Customers even came to the store to bring him a book. The love that everyone has for each other surprises me every day in the very best way." The City Weary Couple. Living in a big city can be stimulating and exciting, but my wife Anne and I like a little fresh air, says Albert Gallner of his decision to move from New York City to Atlanta some 40 years ago. Of course, he says, it was only a matter of time before Atlanta grew from a manageable city into a sprawling one. With retirement from a career in graphic design and advertising on the horizon, Albert and Anne began looking for a small town to call home. "We were in the Museum of the Albemarle in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and we told the nice lady there we were looking for retirement possibilities," recalls Albert. "She said, 'Have you seen Beaufort?' I said, 'We've seen Beaufort, South Carolina.' And she said, 'No, I want you to look at Beaufort.'" They were charmed by the quiet, easygoing nature of the town, as well as the mix of architectural styles, from coastal cottages to Beaufort's more decorative homes. The couple bought a circa 1900 Queen Anne cottage in the historic district. It's easy to spot amid the street's sea of little white houses. The roof is a rich maroon, as are the shutters, and a deep olive green trims the house, but it was white when they found it. "The older neighbors kept bringing us photos of how it was painted previously," says Albert of the house. "That's where we got the idea to go with multiple colors. If the paint job doesn't encourage passersby to slow down, the wildflowers sprouting along the sidewalk might. I planted them there to try to entice pollinating insects, like bees," says Albert, who also paints maritime scenes in his home studio. "We have a neighbor who's been here for probably 70 years. She lives two doors up and has a fabulous garden. I go out to get the paper every morning, and sometimes I find her with her little cart working in my front yard. That's the difference between a city like Atlanta or New York or Beaufort. It's just the nature of this town." Town peddlers. 2.5 minutes. That's how long it took Betsy and David Cartier to decide Beaufort was the place they would settle down for good. For 3 years, the hospitality vets had searched the North Carolina coast for a year-round city with tasteful tourism, and in an instant, Beaufort filled the bill. It was almost a flashback to my childhood, says Betsy, who grew up in small town New Jersey. The couple then went home to Portsmouth, Virginia, closed their coffee shop, and moved to Beaufort 45 days later with no jobs and no real plan. We just love the feel of the town, Betsy says. David learned the local businesses by building websites for them, while Betsy wandered around town on her bicycle. I would ride my bike, take pictures, write little things down in my notebook, and match up all the houses to the brochures, she says. Once, she adds with a laugh, somebody in town thought she was working for the tax assessor's office. These days, locals know exactly who Betsy is when they see her riding around. For 6 years, she and David have owned Hungry Town Tours, introducing hundreds of guests each year, some on bikes and some on foot, to Beaufort's many charms, from waterfront eateries with delicious fresh seafood to landmarks made famous by Nicholas Sparks novels, the most popular of their 16 tours. We're from off the island, as most people say, says David. But they've embraced us because we've tried to really tell people the story of Beaufort. That warm welcoming is that little port town city town's calling card. Wherever you come from, wherever you've been, Beaufort invites you to come on in, sit down, and stay a while, maybe even for the rest of your life. South's Best Small Towns by State: Alabama, Fairhope, Arkansas, Hot Springs, Delaware, Lewes, Florida, St. Augustine, Georgia, Helen, Kentucky, Bardstown, Louisiana, Natchitoches, Maryland, Annapolis, Mississippi, Oxford, Missouri, Branson, North Carolina, Beaufort, Oklahoma, Stillwater, South Carolina, Beaufort, Tennessee, Gatlinburg, Texas, Fredericksburg, Virginia, Williamsburg, West Virginia, Morgantown. Top 10 Best Small Towns. Number 1, Beaufort, North Carolina. Number 2, Beaufort, South Carolina. Number 3, St. Augustine, Florida. Number 4, Aiken, South Carolina. Number 5, Fairhope, Alabama. Number 6, Columbia, Tennessee. Number 7, Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Number 8, Bluffton, South Carolina. Number 9, Cleveland, Mississippi. Number 10, Blowing Rock, North Carolina. Spotlight on Natchitoches, Louisiana, the City of Lights. It's tempting to call Natchitoches a sleepier version of New Orleans, a wallflower that's content to hide in the wings while the Big Easy, 4 hours southeast, puts on a brassy show. The comparison is understandable. Both places feature ironwork-trimmed facades and French and Spanish architectural influences at every turn. But spend some time here, and you'll find that Natchitoches is no shrinking violet. Follow the riverfront past kayak rental docks and the 19th century Creole-style roque house. Above it, stroll Front Street, the town's main drag, where you'll find handmade soaps at Bathhouse Soapery and Caladarium, and other sundries at Cafe Frederick General Mercantile, Louisiana's oldest general store. A block over, grab lunch at Lazy One's Meat Pie Restaurant and try that Creole specialty. In the afternoon, explore the town's 33-block historic district and its many art galleries and antique shops. At night, if you time your visit with the holidays, you can join the revelers who gather to watch the Christmas lights set the river twinkling. For a side trip, don't miss the food, fellowship, and Zydeco at Cane River Commissary in nearby Natchitoches, Louisiana. Natchitoches is a small town with a deep soul, one that holds tight to the homegrown and opens its arms wide to outsiders. It's a little less showy than New Orleans, perhaps, but nobody seems to mind. Betsy Cribb. Spotlight on St. Augustine, Florida, the historic gem. It might be the ancient city, but it's not a forgotten one. Founded by the Spanish in 1565, St. Augustine is an architectural treasure on Florida's Atlantic coast, about midway between Jacksonville and Daytona Beach. Gilded Age industrialist Henry Flagler first saw the tourism potential in this town on the Matanzas River, now just a bridge crossing from the surf at Volano Beach and Anastasia State Park. You can spot his influence on the spectacular Hotel Ponce de Leon, now Flagler College, and other hotels and churches he built in the Spanish Renaissance style. Book a room within the north-south bounds of Cuna and Bridge Streets, with Avenida Menendez and Cordova Street as your east-west borders, and you can walk to almost everything. The Hilton St. Augustine Historic Bayfront and Casa Monica Resort and Spa are both worth a splurge. More intimate options include the Collector Luxury Inn and Gardens, Inn on Charlotte Bed and Breakfast, and Augustine Inn Bed and Breakfast. St. George Street is a virtual midway of retail on one end and galleries on the other. Grab a bite at Casa Maya Preserved Restaurant and Gofres and Woods in town, or try Caps on the Water and Beaches across the Volano Causeway. Don't miss Ice Plant Bar, featuring a restaurant and distillery. Valerie Fraser Luce. Spotlight on Fairhope, Alabama. The beauty on the bay. Growing up landlocked in Birmingham, I never fully understood my mother's nostalgia for her hometown of Fairhope. Her stories of coming home from school and hopping on a 14-foot catamaran were just folklore to me until recently, when we grabbed my grandmother and took a 3-generation trip there. Wiry trees draped with Spanish moss frame pastel-painted bungalows. Folks wave hello like they've known you for decades. I had the best pub sandwich of my life at Mancy's Antique Club, and after driving through the fruit and nut district, wanted to buy one of its historic homes on the spot and stay forever. Some things have changed, of course. In nearby Point Clear, the Grand Hotel Golf Resort and Spa recently got a facelift, but still remains warm and cozy. Fairhope Brewing Company, which opened in 2013, makes and distributes IPAs across the Lower South. And Mom didn't grow up with Panini Pete's, but it's now a local hotspot, located in Fairhope's French Quarter, just down the road from Page and Palette, a book lover's fantasy shop. Once you watch a sunset from the Tiki Bar at American Legion Post 199, you'll totally understand Fairhope nostalgia and wonder why anybody would possibly want to live anywhere else on Earth. Catherine Owen. Spotlight on Cleveland, Mississippi, the not-so-sleepy small town. The Friday night scene at Delta Meat Market's happy hour dinner serves as a microcosm for Cleveland, Mississippi, a long table lined with travel agents from Europe, a young father dancing with a toddler on his shoes, lifelong residents sipping cocktails on a wood banquette, and college students sharing a charcuterie board. While the Delta is known for a leisurely pace, Cleveland has always had more pep in its step, due to a consistent trickle of newcomers to Delta State University, home of the Fighting Okra, and pilgrims on the Mississippi Blues Trail. But over the past decade, locally grown entrepreneurs have transformed downtown. Chief among them is William Ouija Rogers, founder of Hey Joe's, a design-minded burger and beer spot that has become a beloved tour stop for bands beyond the blues, and Mosquito Burrito, a colorful answer to the Chipotle chain. He also co-founded the sassy but substantive Keep Cleveland Boring, a nonprofit that organizes events to counter any notion of a dull, small-town mindset. Another native, Cole Ellis, has cooked in Nashville and Charleston, but came home to Mississippi to open his downtown butcher shop restaurant, Delta Meat Market. Soon after, he was named a James Beard Award's Best Chef South semifinalist for his fresh visions of local ingredients. In April, Ellis plans to move his restaurant to the Cotton House Cleveland Hotel, a boutique property that will cater to the thousands of visitors who come to tour the town's new Grammy Museum, which manifests the lineage of American music and brings it back home to the Delta. Hannah Hayes. From Southern Tales. Lead Dog, The Good Neighbor, Meet Bear, Silver Spring, Maryland's most popular miniature sheep-a-doodle. Rachel Rushforth, Bear's owner, says he has a lot of energy. She and her husband Blake have 2 toddlers, and Bear tags along on all of their family adventures. He is particularly popular on the playground. I joke that Bear is the Pied Piper of the toddler world because he never fails to have a gaggle of kids following him, says Rachel. He is friendly to a fault, for his birthday, the girls attached a bunch of balloons to his leash and then paraded him around the neighborhood for our morning walk, she adds. Instagram, at sheepadoodlebear. Breed, miniature sheepadoodle, which is an old English sheepdog-poodle mix. Age, 5 years old. Favorite treat, string cheese. If Bear hears string cheese being opened, he will wake up from a dead sleep wherever he is and come running, says Rachel. Ideal weekend itinerary, soccer practice, swimming at Grandma's, and a casual patio dinner if the weather is right. From the beauty and style section, Picture of Health by Betsy Cribb. House call, allergy season. Fight off unwelcome symptoms in 2 easy, physician-approved steps. Get a head start. One of the most common causes of springtime seasonal allergies is tree pollen, says Dr. Jane Choi of the Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Center in Middle Tennessee. So the key is beating pollination to the punch. If you start using a nasal steroid spray, like Flonase, before large exposure to seasonal pollen, it's more effective than beginning the treatment mid-season, after severe allergy symptoms have already developed. Keep it clean. The tiny pollen particles you can't see cause the most respiratory trouble, notes Dr. Choi. Shower and put on fresh clothes after you've been outside, she says. To take it one step further, she recommends using a sinus rinse kit to shower the inside of your nose, as this will make nasal steroid sprays more effective. Must have. Stifle your sneeze. Keep sniffles at bay with a hand-stitched hanky. Out of pocket. Rose handkerchief. $42 each. HibiscusLinens.com. Secrets to a Good Life. Open invitation. How an Austin, Texas mom transformed her neighborhood with a turquoise picnic table. It started with a happy accident. When Kristen Schnell ordered a picnic table for a backyard barbecue, the delivery crew mistakenly placed it under a magnolia tree in her front yard. It was an aha moment, she says. I knew some of my neighbors and the other moms who were busy driving around minivans and shuttling kids to and fro, but I noticed there was a lack of connection. So she painted the picnic table a cheery turquoise and invited neighbors and passers-by to join her there for a morning cup of coffee or an evening glass of wine. I love to entertain people in the house, but there's a lot of preparation that goes into that, she says. You search through magazines and recipe books. You're exhausted just planning. The table takes away those distractions and says, just show up. Now, there are turquoise tables in all 50 states and 13 countries, though not all of them are painted turquoise, Schnell notes. I can't change what's going on at the 30,000-foot level, but I can show up and love my neighbor. Mindfulness moment. Just breathe. Daily deep breathing has several health benefits, from managing stress to regulating the autonomous nervous system, which controls body temperature and bladder function. Focus on breathing from your diaphragm, not your chest, as this is more effective at producing relaxing feelings. Learn more at mayoclinic.org. From the Beauty and Style section, Beauty Secrets. My grandmother, the beauty icon. She could print more than a southern bride. My granny was a natural beauty who didn't believe in trusting beauty to nature. When I think of her years after her passing, I picture her painting her nails or pin curling her hair and tying it up in a kerchief a la Rosie the Riveter. She was always moisturizing, spritzing, brushing, combing, and spraying. It took her a whole month just to plan her look for my cousin's wedding and 2 days to execute it. She was gorgeous, as always, with clairol dark hair and loose waves and curls, an elegant evening dress, and just the right jewelry. She told me once that a man at church had asked whether her hair color was natural. Apparently, he had a death wish. Granny's unflinching retort, "It's the color I was born with." Valerie Fraser Luce. Granny had dark, shoulder-length hair all the way into her 90s. I intend to follow her lead, and I've got the chemicals to do it. Root Touch-Up Color Blending Gel, $10, clairol.com. On a hot summer day, Granny used to say, "I don't mind feeling this way, but I sure do hate to look like this." She loved good-smelling bath powder. Beautiful Perfumed Body Powder, $57, esteelauder.com. Thank you for listening to today's Southern Living Magazine. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Angela Odie saying goodbye from Al Radio, and have a great weekend.